Hey, good morning, all. Welcome to the Common Good Podcast. 23rd of April. It's a Tuesday. Rob, I just feel like things are back on track.
Feeling that way?
Yeah, yeah.
Tuesday morning, we're talking politics.
It's great. We've got a guest with us, somebody running for Congress who we are always so excited to talk with. Whenever there's someone in this particular case with Rodney, it's going to be just fantastic. Minneapolis, 65 degrees or something today. Big blue sunny sky. Just every once in a while, the Earth after Earth Day tricks you that it's not ultimately trying to kill you, and just kind of says, "Hey, enjoy your day," and then later it will take all you got, and leave you.
I think side of the road. Very similar weather here in Northwest Arkansas, somewhere outside of Fayetteville, and but it remains windy, and I'm just. This has been the spring of windiness, and tired of it. As you know, especially Doug, as a guy who likes to smoke a cigar, as you know I am. Smoking a cigar, you know, on the back porch in the wind, not as fun.
Really?
Yeah.
What? I don't do that. I don't engage in such farming behavior. What is it that you like? What ruins that for you?
No self-harming behavior?
No,
none?
That particular self-harming behavior. Yeah. No.
Okay. Because I've seen some of the stuff you've eaten.
Just that particular one. I didn't know what it was about that one.
Fire and oxygen and whatnot. And so when the wind blows, it causes the cigar to burn unevenly. And you get... You get what's called canoeing, where a strip of your cigar has burned out and burned through, and your cigar looks like a canoe, and it's just not a great experience.
Well, I'm sorry, I have a friend for your loss.
But as far as your Earth Day comment goes, where you say the Earth is trying to kill us, you sure it's not the other way around?
Well, look, it's been, things have been falling, shaking, storming, electricity flying at human beings.
Floods.
For the whole time. Everyone's in danger. We should also try not to kill the Earth. On those off days when you think there's benevolence in nature for you. It's like those people that live with bears, the bear whisperer people, and then the camera's running and then they're like, and then it's also just a grizzly bear. And that was that. You know what I'm talking about? Those movies, that movie. Well, maybe it's not, I'd say those movies, there's a series of them, but that one. All right. Hey.
I thought we were about ready to have a Siegfried and Roy story here, but listen. Well,
did that happen to him too? Did he get killed by the lion that they or the tiger? Mm-hmm. See, okay, there we go.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Don't have a wild animal as a pet. It's basically the moral of the story. Because what are we even talking about, Doug? There are so many ridiculous things to talk about. So many hilarious things to talk about. We get to talk about Donald Trump being on trial as the first former president of the United States to face a criminal trial. We get to talk about his flatulence during that trial.
I'm unaware of this.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Don't tell me now. Let me live with some hope and some some
odor in the court was trending on Twitter, which is
odor
just
odor in the court.
It's just fantastic. People are the best. Hilarious, wonderful things to talk about. And Doug, I don't know if you were familiar with the story that I texted you last night. There is a congressman, a conservative, MAGA Trump supporting, voted against the certification of the election, congressman you know, the one of these pull yourself up by the bootstraps.
Yeah, bootstrapper. Real bootstrapper.
Don't take government handouts.
Right. Government spends too much money. Let's whittle this thing down, crowd. Yep.
Yeah. This guy is suing the federal government for back pay because he claims that he hasn't been paid enough as a congressman who's paid $174,000 a year. And his name is Rick Crawford. He's the congressman from Arkansas's first congressional district. And we have as a guest today his opponent, who's going to explain all this to us, my friend Rodney Govins. Hey, Rodney, how are you today?
Rodney.
What's going on, guys? I appreciate you having me. Thanks a lot.
Rodney, simple question. Why do you want a job where you're so underpaid?
So let's start with public service, right? Public servants, you're supposed to be doing this in the best interest of the people.
There you go.
Didn't know that you had the opportunity to get rich. I always thought working for a nonprofit, you just kind of like a glutton for punishment. So it's interesting to know that, you know, they do get paid, number one. And apparently, you know, my opponent thinks that his retirement fund needs to be refreshed and his gross revenue for the last 12 years needs to be paid back. And then his current paycheck isn't enough, which, you know, whatever, man, this guy.
Yeah, dude. Okay, so you ran through a couple of things there that are very clear, and you have a wonderful YouTube video about this. If people want to go to your website, rodneyforcongress.org, they can watch you do this where you're standing outside of his office. Well done. Love that kind of stuff. Big fan of the show up at the door and knock and see if anybody's home at the congressional offices.
Oh, this guy's never home.
what you just laid out there is here that the seated congressperson is not only saying, hey, we should probably adjust up for cost of living what people who represent the United States in the House of Representatives are paid. He actually wants back pay because he feels that it's been an unconstitutional limit on the amount of money that he's earned. That's where it's got real bollocks to it, right? It's like he wants to go back and say previous Congresses did not behave in a way that was constitutional, and you actually owe me more than what I agreed to when I took the job. I mean, there's this other side to it. When I was hearing your critique of him and then reading the article about this, that I thought, this guy took the job knowing what the pay was, and now he's been noodling around thinking I could squeeze a little more out of the out of this already squeezed orange rind. Do you see
this early? Yeah, let's take it a step further, right? So I've always been of the mindset coming out of telecom for 20 years where, you know, we have to use contract labor. You get paid for services rendered, okay? I would argue that he hasn't done his job, period.
Right.
So what are you complaining about pay for? You haven't done anything. You didn't vote to expel George Santos, one of the most corrupt, if not the most corrupt congressional representative we've seen in our lifetime. You didn't cast a ballot for that. You voted against veterans getting their benefits. The Vietnam era veteran guys were really, really counting on that Burn Pit Act. And luckily, a Democratic led House of Representatives actually got that passed. But Rick argued that we can't vote for it because we can't afford it.
Can't afford it.
If we can't afford to help our veterans, you know, the same guys that they scream, thank you for your service, right? If you can't help them out, then you definitely don't need any back pay. If you're not going to cast your ballots, you don't need back pay. If you're not going to come home and engage your constituency, you don't need back pay. You don't need a pay raise. I'd argue you need a pay cut.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Hey, you were deciding to run for Congress before the current congressman decided to file a lawsuit for back pay. What got you into this before you found out that he would be so bold as to think that he needs to, you know, start shaking the sock drawer loose for a little stashes of change. When did you, why did you decide to run before you knew about all this?
I'm tired of the politics as usual stuff. It feels to me that nothing's getting fixed and that we're not talking about actual issues that are impacting people on a daily basis.
Right on.
I mean, we're talking about the VA healthcare and benefits system, which operates on this, you know, unspoken policy of delay, deny until you die, right? I don't think that's the way we need to be treating our veterans. I don't think that's the way we need to be treating the women and men that served with me when I was in. We look at 300,000 kids getting kicked off of Medicaid, right? And I'm just talking about in the state of Arkansas. We see a foster care system that's in shambles, right? We see a Department of Human Services struggling to meet their budget and not being able to pay adequately for the services that those guys have to offer, right? We're talking about foster care workers working 65, 70 hours a week. All right. And we can't keep them because the good ones get burned out, right? And then you're left with nothing in the barrel left. So we've got real problems across not just Arkansas, but across the country. And I've personally got a congressional representative right now, incumbent, who could care less about even coming home and addressing the actual issues, right? Helena, West Helena's water system went without water already 3 times this year.
Wow.
I mean, and on the same day that we're doing a water drive trying to help the people of Helena, West Helena out, he's off in Harrison, Arkansas doing a book signing. And apparently the book signing didn't go that well, so he decided to file a lawsuit.
He thought he could make money off of a book deal, and then realized, yeah, maybe I should shake the drawers.
See if I can... Rodney, I want to talk about you, but before we do that, I just want to ask you a question about Rick Crawford. You know, Rick Crawford obviously cares deeply about fair pay. So much so that he would sue the federal government to get some for him. He supports raising the minimum wage to $15, doesn't he?
He sure doesn't.
Wow.
He's been pretty. I hate to say public because that would give off the aura that he actually says anything publicly, right? He's been on the record as saying that the minimum wage should not be raised to $15 and that our economy can't afford it. He's really, really critical about what we can't afford while he's following this lawsuit. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah. And you, Rodney, you're a working class guy. You're a real dude, you know, who served in the military, who worked in telecom, and, you know, and I mean, you're just like a regular guy drinking your Red Bull, like, you know, going to work, doing your thing. And is it, you know, you know people who are making minimum wage and just barely getting by. Like, how much does this lawsuit just offend you personally as a human being? You know, talk about, I mean, we kind of laugh about it, but this thing is really kind of offensive, isn't it?
Well, Rob, just for the record, I've been working on my cussing, so I'm going to try not to, you know, let a couple of words out about how we really feel, right?
Give me the name of your album, Working on My Cussing.
Here's that sounds like a platinum hit right there. That sounds like a banger, right?
I'm writing it down.
A couple of my neighbors are teachers. Right. They're public educators. And I understand that they just got a raise and thank goodness they did, but it's still not enough. Right. I've got one of my best friends is a parole and probation office manager. He manages an entire area. Right. So all across Eastern Arkansas, he's managing all these offices and he doesn't get paid enough. I mean, if you really want to get down to it, he's making slightly above minimum wage if you really want to look at the hours that he works. We've got law enforcement officers, we've got teachers, we've got, you know, restaurant employees, we've got people that actually do contribute on a daily basis to our country and to our economy. And these are essential workers. These people are essential. And watching them struggle living paycheck to paycheck, trying to figure out which bill to pay this month, right? Knowing that they're going to be broke and they're still going to be missing a payment on something. It burns me up to know that a congressional representative feels like he can't get by on 5 times the average income across his district. Oh, that burns me up is an understatement. But again, I'm working on my cussing.
Yeah. Yeah, well done. Hey, Ronnie, one of the questions that I'm always intrigued at with people running for the House of Representatives is why this particular way of serving? Like, there are a lot of ways that people can serve our country. There's a lot of ways that they can deal with issues. You've been clear about a number of them that you care about. Water issues, foster care, wages for people. A lot of those aren't dealt with at the federal level or the lawmaker level. When you were thinking about the things you could do, what was it about running for Congress that you said, these issues matter to me, and this is the best means by which I can impact those? And part of the reason I love to hear this is I want a lot of people running for Congress. I think it's so great. I mean, you know, secretly I want to do it too, but I currently like the people that are representing me. So I think it's fabulous and people should do it, and I want to open people's minds to it. So with all the things you were thinking about, why did you say running for Congress is the path that I should invest in for this? And because it's so much effort and so much work to do what you're doing. Why was this worth it?
So the first immediate thing, being a veteran, right? If you want to fix the VA healthcare, you ain't going to be able to do it at the state level. And I think it is far past time that we actually address the elephant in the room, right? That the VA is not serving veterans in the capacity that it needs to be. So that was really issue number one. Issue number two, you start looking at some of the finer details, especially mm-hmm. around the Department of Health and Human Services, mm-hmm. you know, DHHS, and you start looking at foster care, you start looking at public education, Title 7B, IDEA, all these different federal programs mm-hmm. that are supposed to help out at the ground level. Well, it sure doesn't feel like it's helping out at the ground level. And when I sat back and I was in telecom and I saw the Rural Connect Fund start coming up in Arkansas, which was federal dollars just controlled at the state level, I started realizing, man, the federal government don't really know what to do in some of these instances. And they need somebody that can talk to not only some of the issues, but talk about how people are actually impacted. Right. Somebody who knows what it's like to be broke, right? Like, we know plenty of people that are broke. I mean, you're talking to one right now, right? So, you know, they need that kind of, you know, fresh idea and fresh attitude. And I think that's kind of what led me to making this run.
Love it. I mean, that's, you know, in whatever struggles there are with our U.S. system of government, the idea that we have representatives in the House of Representatives, different than the senators who do their thing, is really a wonderful thing and important. And like that idea that, well, someone is going to be there and someone's going to be speaking on behalf of these issues and they should be representative is really, really great. So thanks for that answer and for caring about those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Rodney, you know, thinking about this, I, you know, being here in Arkansas, I know a little bit about your district. It's a big one. Tell us about what it's like, you know, I mean, you have it Harrison, Arkansas at one end of your district. For people who might not know, Harrison, Arkansas is considered the most racist city in America. It's where, you know, the head of the Ku Klux Klan lives, and until recently had, you know, white power billboards in Harrison and kind of a crazy place. You've got that in your district, and then you've got all the way down to like the Mississippi Delta area. Tell us about what it's like to run in this particular district that you're in and how things are going.
No, I'm glad you brought up Harrison. I love going out there. And it's odd for me to say as an African American, given the perception and the history that Harrison has, I get it. Right. But it is a healthy reminder every time I drive up State Highway 65 and I passed the White Pride radio sign, which is still there, by the way, Rob. I got pictures if you need them. You know, it's a healthy reminder to let me know that no matter how successful you are in this world, in this country, no matter how much good you do, no matter how well you can reach out and connect to people, there's always going to be somebody who's judging you by the color of your skin rather than the content of your character. Hmm. But the good part about it is that sign represents an extreme, maybe 10% of the people up in Harrison, mm-hmm. right? There's going to be 10% extreme loud voices in the room. I'm just tired of the 10% of the loud voices drowning out the rest of the 90% good people that are there. And I get an opportunity to talk with them every time I go up there. So yeah, it is a big district, Rob. It does encompass Harrison. It also encompasses Eudora. And here's something funny. For all the differences that we focus on, right? And this is, you know, and this goes into politics. We've got a lot of hot button topics. A lot of people have opinions. A lot of people have strong beliefs, and that's fine. Everybody's entitled to that. We live in America, First Amendment right. But we all have the same problems. Eudora, Arkansas, until I went down there a couple of years ago with the telecom company, they didn't even have broadband internet. Same with Wilmot, Arkansas, right? These are predominantly African-American cities and towns. When you go up to Harrison, guess what their complaint is? They don't have adequate broadband. Mm-hmm. When you go to St. Joe, which is predominantly white, they're complaining about their public education system being under attack. You go down to the Lake Villages and the Eudoras and the Drew Counties, they've got the same complaint. That's predominantly black down there. So we all have the same issues, right? But we don't have leadership that actually wants to address it and talk about it. And that's the common theme that we found across the 31 counties that I'm covering.
Yeah. 31 counties.
Hey, go big or go home.
Yeah. Yeah. Rodney, it seems like women's reproductive health is going to be a huge issue this fall. It's going to be something that activates a lot of voters. We've seen that already through ballot initiatives in Kansas and Ohio, other places. There's a possibility that Arkansas could have a ballot initiative protecting a woman's right to choose on the ballot. And then we've seen, you know, this talk about a national abortion ban. We've seen neighboring states in Alabama, you know, which isn't very far away from us, trying to ban IVF, and you've got, you know, in vitro fertilization. You've got all this stuff going on. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about both what your stand is on that, but then also, you know, your own personal story and how, you know, you could have been affected if, you know, some of these bans had been in place.
Yeah. So let's start with women's rights, right? Let's start with medical freedom, because that's what I'm looking at it as, right? We're talking about medical procedures here. And as a male, I try to stay out of the conversation altogether because I've never given birth. Now, I've eaten Taco Bell at 2 o'clock in the morning, so sometimes I might have felt like I was giving birth, but that's not the same thing. That's not 20 hours of labor, no matter how many Mexican pizzas you down. But women should be able to make their own decisions with their medical doctors, with their families, with whoever they want to involve, because it's their right, it's their choice. Just as it's somebody's choice that declines a COVID vaccine. That is a medical decision. It's not my business. You know, there's ramifications for everything, right? And there's always trauma that's associated with big decisions, especially medical decisions like that. And I don't think people understand what that really means. And I'm a court appointed special advocate, Rob. I'm best job I never got paid for.
So talk about what that is for people that don't know what a court appointed special advocate is.
So being a CASA advocate, being a volunteer, you're an officer of the court effectively, and you represent children that are in foster care, that are in need, right? And the caseworkers may change because you're not a part of DHS. So you may get a different DHS caseworker to work with on a case every 3 months, every 6 months, whatever. But you're the only constant in that child's life. Everybody changes. Placements can change. I had a kid that changed placement, I think, 12 times in a year, mm-hmm. right? Every new foster home, guess what? I was there. He had different caseworkers, different secondary caseworkers in a lot of cases because he was outside of his primary county. It's the best job I never got paid for. You get to be there for the child. You get to impact that child, and you get to have multiple cases if you choose to do that. So,
well thanks for that work. Thanks for that work. Yeah. I should ask, have you ever considered suing DHS for back pay that you didn't receive when you suggested that ever, well, has that ever crossed your mind?
I've considered suing DHS for a lot of things never pay, though, right?
Just to be clear, just see what kind of guy you are. All right, fair enough.
But yeah, I love that job, and it exposes you to a lot of training. And I always like to use this case study as an example. A few years back, I think it was back in 2014, maybe 2013. We got the case study as part of our training program in 17. 13-year-old girl comes into foster care because of allegations of sexual abuse. Turns out that the sexual abuse allegations were true. She was being sexually abused by her father. DHS has a policy that they're supposed to get a PACE evaluation, which is a full medical mock-up. They do blood tests and genetic tests and all that. Instead of taking 30 days per policy, it's DHS, so it took 60 days. When they finally got everything back and they come back from the doctor after 2 months being in care, they find out that this girl is 16 weeks pregnant. She's pregnant by her father. She's 13 years old. Her medical provider felt the need to put in these case notes that this girl was so physically immature that she would have died trying to carry a child in the third trimester, much less give birth. Now, under current Arkansas law, there is absolutely no provision in there that would have allowed her to have the medical procedure to terminate that pregnancy. None at all. The only way that she would have been given an opportunity around it is if she was actually dying on the table and the doctor finally said, we got to stop trying. By then it's too late. By then there's physical trauma, the mental trauma that she had to deal with. So when people say that they're pro-life, I always like to bring up that case study, and I like to ask, how pro-life are you? Because if you're pro-life, then we need to fix foster care. We got 4,400 kids in foster care and only 1,500 approved homes. As the young kids say, the math don't math.
Right.
So we need to have those higher level discussions, and we need to be able to have conversations around it. I don't have all the answers on that. I'm a dude, but I definitely think women deserve a seat at the table, and at the very least, a representative who hears them and who's willing to listen and who's willing to do and take the hard steps and in hard conversations up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Say something about IVF.
Yeah. So we've got these nice postcards in case anybody wants one. Follow us. See us at the website. You see a picture of my family. My kids were born from IVF. We went through in vitro fertilization, and we had to do it twice. We were living in North Carolina at the time. My employer at the time was Time Warner Cable, and they actually one of the better employers, I would say, and it's probably the best time I had outside of the military working. They had a fund that they gave us full access to, where we didn't have to pay a dime. We wanted kids, and it wasn't gonna happen naturally, right? So, you know, throughout the testing process and all that stuff, we found out that if we wanna have our kids, then we need to go through IVF. My wife went through the drugs. She went through, you know, two shots almost every day, if my recollection's right. For a while there, we got confused, and we were putting the shot that's supposed to be in your butt and your arm. It's a big old needle, man. That was crazy, right? So she's tough, man. She's tougher than most. I'm going to tell you that. She's tougher than most. I was wincing. I was like, ooh, that's bad. But we went through round. We had two eggs implanted and we lost the first round. So I don't know if people understand that it's heart wrenching, man, because you go through a lot of work, you adjust in, you know, your diet, you're getting excited, right? You got this excitement going on, not just with you, but with the family, right? I know my mom, I'm adopted, but my mom was so anxious to get her grandkids, and my mother-in-law wouldn't shut up about it. So, you know, we felt kind of broken after the first round. Tom Warner Cable said, go and do another one. Wow. So we did another one, and we thankfully we got pregnant. There are some days where I look at my twins, my little terrorists, and I think, what in the world was I doing, right? But the joy that they bring me on a daily basis can't be replaced. And if it wasn't for IVF, I wouldn't have my kids. And I think not only should IVF not be treated the way that Alabama decides to treat IVF, because it is a process, but I think we need to make IVF services more affordable for couples like us, right? Infertility is a real thing, and we shouldn't try to dehumanize somebody, and we shouldn't try to make people social pariahs because of infertility. We've got the science that can actually help that out. So why don't we make this more affordable and more accessible to folks?
Wonderful. Hey Ronnie, will you say a little bit about like how the campaign is going, your chances? Can you just talk about this? Because there's a lot of people who will only do things if they think there's a guaranteed win. There's a lot of, there's a lot of evaluating on efficacy of anyone's behavior, and a lot of what's the pointism in the world. Can you talk about what it takes for someone like you to run against a seated Republican in Arkansas, and what people can do to participate with you to make sure that that no longer does the congressman have to feel he's being underpaid?
Yeah, so I like to start off with this. Numbers tell a story. And I used to be a director in telecom. Shouts out to Windstream, shouts out to Swift Connect, right? I was a director, and I understand numbers, and I understand spreadsheets, and I understand projections. And you start looking at those numbers and you're like, man, this isn't going to work out. But numbers don't tell the whole story, especially in the political climate that we're in. When back in October, I got invited to go, and this is before I filed or anything, I got invited to go to Jasper, Arkansas, which is outside of the 31 counties, right? I don't know why they wouldn't just draw that one in. Why not, right? Already at 31, why not 32? But we go up to Jasper, Arkansas for a Buffalo National River town hall. And I am the only African American in a room of 2,000 people. And I'm not from there. So the list of negatives, I just start checking the boxes, right? Very uncomfortable situation for most people. Well, I start engaging in conversation. I just want to talk to people, see what their feeling is. And this guy had Trump overalls on. I can't make this up. Never seen this before in my life. He had these overalls on with the two straps, and it had Trump on it. And I said, man, you got to be kidding me. This dude's a master marketer, right? And we start talking, and we didn't agree on 100% of the issues. We talked about women's rights. We talked about voting rights. We talked about rural broadband. We talked about the National River. We talked about everything. And he wraps his arm around me, and he says, I want you to meet some of my friends. Now, Jasper's right around the corner from Harrison, so I'm a little nervous, right? But I go over and I meet these guys, and they got their Trump hats on, and I have the same kind of conversation with them, and we're laughing and joking, and we're cussing. This is before I started working on my cussing. And they started, they made the comment. They said, man, you need to move up to Jasper. You know, we'd like you to run for something up here. And I looked at them. I'm not, I don't think that's a good idea for me, right? And he said, man, are you going to be on my ballot? And I said, why? And I'm looking at his Trump overalls, and he says, because I would vote for you. Yeah. He said, don't get me wrong. I'm voting for Trump. He said, I'm a Trump guy through and through, but I would vote for you. When I asked him why, he said, because you're here. Because you're talking to me. You're not talking at me.
Or about him. Yep.
And I sat back and I take the same message. I am who I am. I'm just a regular guy, right? But I take the same message, the same approach. And no matter where I go, no matter what room I'm in, I walk out with the same feeling of accomplishment. And the people walk out so fired up and engaged. And it doesn't matter who you're going to vote for the presidency. You're going to want to vote for Rodney Govens. And you're going to want to turn this district around. Because it not only does it need it, but it's time. When you sit back and you think about all the representatives up in Congress, who's like us? Who knows how to make a crop of bull peanuts, right?
I do know.
Who can crack open that Corona, put that lime in there, right? And I make a mean old fashioned too. Don't get me wrong. I can get behind the bar and start doing some bartending. All right. Nobody that we have in Congress is like
AOC.
That.
AOC apparently can sling from behind the bar.
She's probably a little bit better than me. I'm been out of practice. We'll find out.
She's just a barmaid. What could she possibly know about lawmaking?
Man, but you know, you sit back and you start getting the feeling that the numbers show that it's supposed to be a Republican district. Mm-hmm. But you start talking to people, and it's a Rodney Govens district. From the farmers. From the farmers to the telecom guys to union guys to corporate guys. Like, it is amazing how we go into a room, our campaign, and there's never a room that we're uncomfortable in.
Love it. Yep. So if people want to be comfortable with you, they can go to Rodney for Congress.org, which surprises me that other Rodneys haven't run, or maybe they took the .net or the .net.
No. There's a Rodney Davis, former representative for Illinois. He's Rick's homeboy. They're in that lawsuit together. So, don't get me confused with that guy.
He didn't have Rodney for Congress.org.
Don't get me confused with that guy. That guy, you know, that whole thing is crazy. But you go to RodneyForCongress.org. We've got our blog up there. You can see our blog posts, fully transparent. You can see, you know, anything that you want to know about me. Right. And in the event that you come up with a crazy question or something like that, where you just want to give some feedback, you can go ahead and hit that connect to us link, and you can give me all the unsolicited feedback. And I've gotten some, and all feedback is good feedback. But you can hit us up anytime. Follow us on all the socials. All of our links are right there.
Yep. And most importantly, donate. Talk about the donate button.
So I didn't realize that it was going to be such a challenge in, you know, running for Congress, where the financial challenges, that's the biggest hurdle. Right now, my opponent seems to think that his salary of $174,000 is vastly, you know, underpaying him. So help us raise $174,000 to kick this guy out of Congress.
That's great.
So, you know, we need all the donations we can get. We have a spare change program. My opponent can pick up the phone and grab an $800,000 check from somebody tomorrow. Yep. He can outraise me. He can outspend me. But what he can't do is outorganize me and outcare. His $800,000, you go ahead and give me your spare change in your couch and help me out. Mm-hmm. And I promise you that we can go ahead and flip this district, and we can restore some semblance of common sense, decency, and hard work into Congress. We can do this, but we can't do it alone. So yeah, we do need all the donations we can get.
Rodney, thank you. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for running RodneyForCongress.org. Just another one of the places where you can find a little hope and inspiration in a political world that sometimes feels like it's just set and settled.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Rodney.
You're welcome to stick around or just watch this. Now Rob and I are going to talk about news. And
no, if y'all are going to talk about farting in court, then I definitely have to stick around.
Stick around and talk about the news with us. But let me say
and
this.
All levels of nonsensory.
I have the privilege of getting to know candidates all over the country. You know, it's part of my job and my work with Vote Common Good. I talked to a lot of congressional candidates. I've got two phone calls later today scheduled talking to people that are running for office. Like, this is a big part of what I do, is hearing people's stories. And I often joke that, like, candidates, especially our candidates for Common Good, which Rodney is one, they're a little bit like our kids. We love them all. But you do have favorites. And Rodney, you know this, I think. You're on the short list of my favorites. And so I say this to encourage everybody who's listening, who's watching. And, you know, Yabbitz posted that he's got a donation on the way, which is amazing. Thank you, Yabbitz. Like, listen, folks, if you're going to donate to somebody, donate to Rodney. Like, this is a guy who needs the help and is totally worth the investment. So please, you know, check out Rodney's site and hit that donate button, smash that donate button, and help him on this campaign.
Rodney, thanks. Hey, you're welcome to stick around.
You are. Appreciate it.
Lurking in the background of our utter nonsense.
I like it. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Rodney.
All right, Rob. What's the flatulence story? How and why did I miss it? Is it because it's only trending over on X, or is this?
I don't know. The flatulence story is that Donald Trump keeps falling asleep and then farting in court.
I've heard that happens to some of us.
I totally understand falling asleep when, you know, you're sitting through something boring.
Yes.
You know, and apparently he fell asleep again yesterday. I got a text and I'll just from a friend yesterday that simply said, Donald Trump's, the first witness in this Donald Trump case is named David Pecker.
Yeah. No, it's.
Of course. If you were going to write a movie and you were going to script and they would say,
no, you can't name.
Come on, that's not realistic.
The guy who runs the tabloid, who's covering up for the sex act with hush money, you literally can't name him Pecker.
Yeah, I mean that's too it's, on
it's
the
just,
nose.
So it's just so ridiculous. This whole nonsense. I didn't see. I mean, okay, for people who aren't paying attention closely to this, there's no cameras in the newsroom, so everything has to be kind of reported out.
Yep.
David Pecker was very close to Donald Trump. They'd worked out deals to kill stories. He ran a tabloid that would then buy the rights to certain stories.
Yeah. A tabloid we all know, the National Enquirer.
And again, to reflect on my own childhood, at the Red Owl, when I'd be checking out as a kid, the National Enquirer would sit there and everyone knew how super ridiculous and trashy that thing was. Like that was point. Right. It's the junk food of news. It was the point. And this, of course, is who Donald Trump is in colleagues with to save his political career. The fact that a former business associate, colleague, and someone who I think Donald Trump actually liked was the first one called to sit there and describe the criminality that they joined in together is marvelous. Because the criminal conspiracy around this guy is so pervasive that to finally put a face to it. And it's just really, really too bad that cameras are not allowed in this court. Because if they were, well, I don't know, maybe people would have even behaved differently. You know, you could see that in the OJ trial and some of the other high profile publicity trials that have gone on. That witnesses and everyone tends to, like, it's hard not to know that there's 6 million people watching you right now, you know. That can be that can get in the way.
Well, I mean, we're used to it because of this podcast.
Sure. Yes. I mean, this is what we wake up looking for.
So it started with David Pecker. We're gonna get testimony from Stormy Daniels, from Michael Cohen, apparently another playmate that Donald Trump had a had a relationship with Karen McDougal.
Oh, I forgot about Karen McDougal, yeah.
And then we're also apparently going to get some testimony maybe from Hope Hicks, who was one of Donald Trump's closest advisors in the White House. And if Hope Hicks has flipped on Donald Trump, he's in a lot of trouble. Now, ultimately, you know, this is in the hands of 12 jurors, yeah, and 12 regular people. And, you know, we have to number one, hope and trust that the prosecutors are going to make the case and do it in a compelling way. We have to believe that Donald Trump's lawyers are going to totally screw things up, because they always do, including having their opening statements objected to multiple times, because they couldn't even get their opening statements right. And we have to believe that these 12 people will be just and fair, and, you know, hopefully, Donald Trump will, you know, by Memorial Day, will be convicted.
I hear you. And also, if Donald Trump did indeed commit business crimes to cover up campaign donation outcomes and wrote them off as business, if he indeed did that, and that is a violation of the law in order to cover up other crimes, and it's proven, then you hope the system responds properly. If it's not proven, or he didn't do it, then the ruling should be, you know, that he didn't commit these crimes. Like, this is,
or that he's not guilty. Yes. Beyond a reasonable doubt. Yes. Like, it's totally depends on the prosecutors have to be able to make the case.
Yeah, and he actually had to have done it, right? I'm just taking one step back for all of us to be like, if he did it, they have to prove that he did it. Mm-hmm. It's possible to prove that someone did something, prove to a beyond a reasonable doubt that someone did something that they didn't do. There are people who have been convicted of crimes they did not commit. I know them personally, at very high level, cases. So my hope in all of this is that it can be proven that Donald Trump did it. And I hope that he did that if he is convicted of it, that he did do it. Right. Like, just trying to be a little bit like, not just what does it take to get the guy? And I think that the prosecutors have a great case for this. But I started thinking, now you bring up McDougal and you bring up Stormy Daniels and who's the other one? The other playmate that, Karen McDougal, there's a third one. Just thinking, and I wrote down here, one of the things that makes me so different than Donald Trump, and maybe you too, Rob. I know very few Russians that are connected to the Russian government. I know no playmates or adult film stars.
I love that you were going to say, I know very few. That you are aware of.
Fair enough. Perhaps I am surrounded by them in just sort of my casual way of life. Joe Biden knows very few adult porn stars.
The argument that you're making, though, is very similar to the one that I used to make about the Clintons back when I was a Rush Limbaugh listening conservative Republican. I'd say, like, how many people around you do you know that have died of suicide? Like, what's the number? Because, like, the Clintons, it was something like 12. I hear you. Wow, Squirrely Prepper. Prepper. What did I say? Coming in with the.
I could see Rob sitting on a golden toilet, though. I don't even know where that comes from, but I often see that. In fact, I've said into my chat GPT, please create an image of Rob Ryerson sitting on a golden toilet. And I would suggest you all do that and then send them to Rob. Rob, you want to say your phone number out so they can just text it to you? All right. Hey, other things going on. It sounds like the Speaker of the House did the right thing.
Yeah.
Credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the solemnity of your responsibilities stare you in the face and you just say to yourself,
yeah,
we got to do the right thing here.
Yep.
Personally, don't think it's the right thing to give more money to Israel
right
at this time in this place. They bundled some things together, as often happens in negotiations, but they didn't burn the house down and didn't turn over the keys to Ukraine to the Russians quite yet. Even though Marjorie Taylor Greene is probably very, she may not get her bonus this year from whomever pays her bonuses for the things she does that supports these kinds of
things. That's why she hasn't joined the lawsuit with Rick Crawford because, you know, she's...
She's like, let's not start looking around at where my money's coming from. Let's just keep this all on the nutty old beeswax.
I don't know what illegalities we're suggesting right now, but I read an article last night. I saw it on MSN, but it wasn't originally from there. And the premise of the column was, what if Mike Johnson is actually good at this? No, not feeling it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, basically what he has been able to shepherd through some really significant pieces of legislation, and not gotten himself, you know, whacked in the process. He's taken some personal hits, but they have not come for him quite yet. Like they did, that other former guy,
the hedge fund guy,
Kevin,
a guy named Kevin. Remember when Kevin worked here?
Remember that guy worked here. And so, you know, we'll see. There apparently there's now three congresspeople who are have joined the motion to vacate: Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tom Massey, and Paul Gosar. That guy. Who his?
Do you think he'd go Freedom Fries and just be Gossert instead of being Mr. French Fry with Gossert? But
I'm not French getting that.
My French pronunciation, Gossert.
Gossert.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, but Mike Johnson has navigated this stuff so far, and it's just a matter of, you know. Matt Gaetz, and I think we found out that there was some personal motivation behind what Matt Gaetz did, according to what Kevin McCarthy told us. Matt Gaetz was willing to make the big, big statement, the big risk of filing and moving forward with the motion to vacate. I'm not sure that Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tom Massey, and Paul Gosar have the same personally, like the gumption to do it.
Personal motivation, you know, to do it.
Is a policy difference enough to you know, press that red nuclear button? And they haven't done it so far. We're gonna see if. We're going to see if they've got the guts to do it. Democrats then save Mike Johnson?
Save him. Yeah. I don't think it's that Mike Johnson's particularly good at his job. I think the bar has been so lowered that things that would have been just run of the mill are considered extraordinary.
Mm.
Let's just think about what we're saying he has accomplished and ushered through.
Shut down the government.
That's right. He has not cut funding to an ally who's under attack by Russia.
Right.
Wow. I mean, what courage this
man. But he did ban TikTok. So
could we start carving a fifth face on the mountain?
The first congressman to be on Mount Rushmore.
That's what I think. That's what I think is going on. And look, the fact that the United States won't make the violence happening in Gaza stop is a real sign of the weakness of the United States. I know there are people who think the United States has the power and all they have to do is just do it and then it's done. It just doesn't work like that. So if that's what people think is happening, this really shows the limited capacity the United States has to invoke. Well, that's what I got for today. You got anything else?
Well, I mean, Peggy said earlier that she went to see Civil War based on my recommendation. Did you see it, Doug? Did you see Civil War?
Did not like it.
You didn't like it? Why? Why?
I didn't like the movie itself. I didn't know why I cared about these people. I thought it was slow. I thought there was no reason for the thing that happened at the just before the very end, you know, the photo to happen. I didn't like the premise of it. I think it's ginning up narratives of Civil War violence. I just don't like military killing stuff. Like, there's just, I don't know. I didn't get it. And I have so many people, not only you, so many other people raving about it.
Yeah.
I left there thinking, maybe I was just in the wrong headspace. Maybe it was just something.
Like, yeah. You know, what's interesting is we have you know, Jonathan Brink, don't you?
Oh yeah, sure.
Jonathan Brink, mutual friend. I saw he posted on Facebook yesterday that he had seen it and he didn't like it. And I was like, that was, and for much the same reasons. He said, I didn't care about the characters. It seemed like a, you know, I don't know. But you know, Jim and Peggy and Squirrely Prepper, they all saw it and liked it. I've got another movie recommendation.
Okay.
This is two weekends in a row I've gone to the movie theater by myself.
Well, here we go.
Very strange. And I got one more movie I want to see, so I might do it again this next weekend. I saw Monkey Man.
Oh. I've been awaiting this one. I hope it doesn't disappoint my very sensitive.
Wow. Wow.
Really?
I'm not a fan of like violent movies. Like I'm very suspicious of like the myth of redemptive violence that comes through in movies. Monkey Man, written, directed, produced, starred in by Dev Patel, tells the story. It's based on the Hindu story of Hanuman, a monkey god who came to Earth to serve Ram, and it's just super interesting story. The violence incorporated in, taken out of a Christian narrative, where the Christian narrative does not include, like the Christian narrative, like violence plays the role of like being the thing that gets defeated through, you know, the crucifixion of Jesus. Jesus absorbs the violence and comes out the other side. He does not resort to violence in response. And that's why, you know, I talk about this myth of redemptive violence. In a Hindu narrative, the violence plays a different role in the story. And it really challenged me. It was also super interesting because it's a movie on, it's a commentary on religious nationalism in India.
Yeah.
And it also, there are people who don't fit neatly in kind of traditional gender boundaries that play a really significant role in the movie, kind of recasting them from what the stereotype is of them being sex workers, and just super, super interesting. And it actually sent me a little bit down a rabbit hole after about violence in Hinduism. And apparently one of the things that I read is that like in Hinduism, priests and merchants have to adhere to nonviolence, but warriors and the working class are allowed to utilize violence, which like, that's kind of interesting because it's, that's interesting because it's like, oh, the people with power aren't allowed to be violent. Nice. The people without power are. And maybe that ought to say something about,
wow.
I don't, it was just super interesting and challenging.
Monkey Man. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. But then again, I recommended Civil War to you. I don't have that thing.
I'm trying to make the thing go crazy on my, I don't know how to make it happen. I mean, many, I am clearly in the set aside group that didn't care for Civil War. So if people are looking to me for, or you for their movie advice, you should really check your
stance. And check in next week for a review of Dune 2.
Dune 2. I really want to see Dune 2, and I haven't even seen Dune 1, but
I watched Dune 1 on my phone on the Vote Common Good, the last Vote Common Good excursion, because I wanted to be able to watch Dune 2.
it was your prerequisite. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the difference between the Dunes and then the difference between watching an epic film on your phone versus you sitting in a movie theater where it's designed to overwhelm you with sight, sound, and emotion.
Yeah.
As this podcast, we hope, does for people. We hope you are just absorbed and feel like you're in the basement or in a sunny porch.
Folks, listen.
Friends.
RodneyForCongress.org. Go there and hit that donate button. Seriously.
RodneyForCongress.org.
Yeah, like jump over there, hit that donate button and help this guy.
Yeah, click on it. Yeah. All right. That's it. Bye, everybody.